Hey everyone, Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton here. I don't know about you, but I'm outraged by that decision today by Judge Engoron that essentially destroys President Trump's business that he's had for decades up in New York and subjects him to an outrageous fine of over $350 million. And of course, Democrat politician Letitia James, who ran for office with a promise to destroy President Trump, is in on it as well. Those two Democratic politicians, their abuse of power to destroy Trump and violate his civil rights is a massive scandal. And I tell you, Judge Engoron's decision is one of the worst abuses of judicial power in American history.
So the big news here in Washington, D.C. is the great move by President Trump to federalize the police in Washington, D.C. and deploy the National Guard to deal with the out-of-control crime problem. Under the Home Rule Law that governs Washington, D.C., the president can take over the police department more or less for 30 days. He is the commander-in-chief of the National Guard and so can deploy it without having to ask anyone to deploy it in Washington, D.C. to address the out-of-control crime problem. And yes, it is out of control. Anyone who tells you crime in Washington, D.C. is okay or going down is oblivious, lying, or doesn't live here. And I don't think the oblivious category comprises anyone substantial. The lying category, as you know, is a large crowd, and everyone else pretending that crime in D.C. is okay doesn't live here. There isn't a person who lives here who thinks crime is okay and that it's sufficiently low to provide you the safety and security you deserve as a United States citizen, let alone what is necessary for a functioning capital of a major power such as the United States of America. I mean, if you can't come into our nation's capital as a federal employee, as a foreign diplomat, as a worker, someone doing business with Washington, D.C., someone touring Washington, D.C., a U.S. citizen coming to Washington, D.C. to petition their government under the First Amendment, because you're in fear for your life and your personal safety, there's something seriously wrong. And under our Constitution, Congress has the authority to run the city, and they've basically delegated it to a corrupt local system that lets criminals run amok. The public safety is secondary to anything else they do, which is essentially promoting socialism and spending tax dollars. It's a nightmare here in the city. I'm a D.C. resident. I know it. In fact, I'm a D.C. as of today, I think I'm the only appointee to the D.C. government by President Trump. In addition to being Judicial Watch president, I'm a member of the Commission on Judicial Disabilities and Tenure, which is a body which oversees the ethics and the reappointment of superior court judges and court of appeals judges for the District of Columbia. And those are the local, what you would think of as the local judges here. They're appointed initially by the president and confirmed by the Senate. But as commissioner, I've been a commissioner for 5 years now, provided my views on election renomination or judicial renominations and to President Biden and President Trump. But I've seen up close and personal the dysfunction of the courts, some of which aren't the court's fault, and the dysfunction of the D.C. government generally. I issued this tweet the other day, which described or summarized my concerns. I fully support President Trump's decision to take control of D.C. police and deploy the National Guard to restore the rule of law in Washington, D.C. And then I go into this issue about me being on the commission. I have witnessed up close the dysfunction and failures of the D.C. courts, federal and local prosecutors, and local D.C. government in protecting the public safety. I mean, even our commission can't get its work done because of this dysfunction. I know directly, for instance, that my commission is now unable to review a backlog of judicial complaints, these are ethics complaints, due to lack of previously promised support from the mayor's office. So the mayor was promising us help, and we haven't gotten what's been promised. The judicial misconduct complaints may have serious ramifications for the public safety, but the commission doesn't have the staff or the budget to fully review them. So can you imagine, you know, having complaints potentially about judges and that if the complaints pan out could lead to, you know, disclosure of judicial misconduct that has a public safety component? There could be those types of complaints in our system right now that our commission can't look at because we're unable to because of lack of resources. I mean, that's how this out of control things are. And we're just one aspect, an important one, of the just judicial system and a criminal justice system here in Washington, D.C. Our nation's capital is in crisis. There should be a top-to-bottom review of D.C. governance. Adding federal control of the police and National Guard resources is certainly necessary, but won't be sufficient to address the systemic, corrupt, and wasteful governance failures under home rule. President Trump took an important first step that I hope will ultimately lead to the rescue of my city. And it's your city, too. It's your nation's capital. That's why the capital isn't part of a state. It's why the Capitol is controlled by Congress, because we all have an interest in the nation and a well-run center of culture, commerce, arts, and certainly government. And the left has zero interest in protecting that. They only see the district as a potential 51st state, which is absurd on its face and unconstitutional in my view, so they can get two more left-wing senators. And people like me, and frankly, you know, there are many liberals who work in the city. You know, they work in the commissions I'm talking about, or on the courts. The judges aren't Republican for the most part. I think, you know, I might disagree personally with some of their rulings in terms of being soft on crime, but I know they've got a lot of work to do, and they're completely overwhelmed. In large measure because the D.C. Council is out of control and leftist. And it's just your typical big city run by leftists. And we see this dysfunction in other cities, which in my view is intolerable for those cities as well. It's doubly intolerable for here in Washington, D.C. I mean, what got the president's personal attention, he's been very focused on this since he's come back, because he was outraged when he saw how horrible D.C. was when he got here to begin with in the first term. This young man, his nickname is Big Balls, a funny nickname. He was a member of the Doge team. I think he still was working in some capacity for the federal government. And he nearly was beaten to death after he tried to rescue a woman who was being hassled or carjacked or something. And there's story after story of federal officials, congressional staff, members of Congress being victimized by crime. And crime, I don't know if it's, quote, going down, as Judge Pirro has noted, going down from what to what? From rampage to mob violence? I mean, who are they kidding? No one buys it. I mean, look at this video the other day. I mean, it's so illustrative of what, of why the city is dysfunctional. This leftist attacking the police the other day. This is my note is number 11, sandwich thrower.
Go fucking way! You visit!
Motherfucker!
Oh! 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 You fucking gun! You fucking gun! Fucking gun!
Hey,
so that punk had reportedly a salami sandwich that he threw at the police, and he got arrested. He's facing charges. And you know what? He works at the Justice Department, or at least used to work at the Justice Department. Another reason why I don't trust the Justice Department, because that's what the Justice Department is full of, people like that, frankly, from my experience, willing to do activity like that. You know, and Trump had a brilliant insight into the impact this kind of chaos and anarchy has on visitors to the city. And he talked about his dear old dad. Let's go to number 16.
Said, you know, my father always used to tell me, I had a wonderful father, very smart. And he used to say, son, when you walk into a restaurant and you see a dirty front door, don't go in. Because if the front door is dirty, the kitchen's dirty also. Same thing with the Capitol. If our Capitol's dirty, our whole country is dirty. And they don't respect us. So it's a very good question, actually.
I mean, he's always got the great insight. You know, my family was talking about that quote the other day. And the story was my grandmother simply refused to eat in restaurants. Just refused to eat in them. So his father was probably of my grandmother's ilk when it came to the cleanliness of restaurants back in the day. But that's true. It's like the broken windows theory, right? That Rudy Giuliani famously implemented in cleaning up New York successfully. He said, you know, if all the windows are broken, it just undermines confidence in the public safety and invites more crime. It's because it shows the rule of law, really, that civilization is kind of not running things. Civil society is broken down. And that's true in Washington, D.C. I mean, my concern about Washington, D.C. is that there are not enough National Guard, not enough federal resources. It's a big city. You need a lot of people to be deployed. It's not just in the high crime areas. It's in the so-called low crime areas, where low crime is still too high. There isn't an area of the city that is immune from the criminal class that's been allowed to run rampant. And now the D.C. government has sued Trump to try to restrict his ability to get the police under control and direct their law enforcement. I'm not sure what the courts are going to do there, so there's always a fight. But more power to President Trump. This home rule experiment needs to be reevaluated. Our nation's capital is being destroyed from within for decades, and it needs to stop. It needs to stop. One of the big issues, as I said, out there that the left media doesn't want to talk about is the pardon scandal related to Joe Biden. Now, as you may remember, he pardoned lots of people, including his family members, including Dr. Fauci, including General Milley, including the January 6th hoaxers on the January 6th committee, like the Schiffs of the world, et cetera. And I'll talk more about Schiff later. And some of those pardons are, in my view, null and void because they're pardons about nothing. They don't reference any crimes. They just talk about a time frame and then the individuals getting the pardons being given pardons for anything they may have done in the last 10 years or so. Well, that's not appropriate, and it's not a legitimate pardon. It provides no guidance for anyone trying to enforce the rule of law, provides no guidance for judges. And if I were President Trump, I would direct the Justice Department or whoever he has investigating these scandals to proceed as if the pardons are null and void and let the defendants, if the defendants in the end of any investigation happen to be beneficiaries of such a pardon, let them raise it in the court. But it can't stop Trump from enforcing the rule of law. And there have been more stories. The New York Times put a story out this week essentially it was a leak from the Biden gang trying to get ahead of the confirmation, because you've heard about the AutoPen scandal. The scandal uncovered by our friends at the Oversight Project found that Biden used his AutoPen let's put it this way. I think the only pardon they've confirmed or seemingly confirmed was signed by Joe himself was for his son Hunter. Everything else was auto-penned. Now, there are other executive actions he took that were auto-penned as well. And an auto-pen isn't necessarily illegal in terms of its use. But it would be inappropriate and arguably in violation of the law for an individual to use the auto-pen, affixing Joe Biden's signature without sufficient authorization or permission. And that's what was confirmed in terms of the pardons in large measure by this New York Times piece. Let's go to that PDF. It's a big, long story. I guess the PDF I have is 14 pages, so it's a long story. Now, Biden interviewed the New York Times, and he says, oh, I did all the pardons. Of course, Biden isn't a credible witness, because the story itself confirmed that, at best, he was willing to say, not under oath, that he told his people that they could, that he was agreeable to the pardons that were being talked about. But there's no record of his authorizing the pardon. He didn't sign off. He didn't send an email. All it is secondhand information from his top staff. Joe authorizes the pardon. And that ain't good enough as far as I'm concerned. He says, I made every decision. But there's no sufficient record he made the decision. The Times has reviewed several dozen emails, of course, which haven't been made public yet, which discuss each of the major grants of clemency that were recorded by an auto pen near the end of Mr. Biden's term. Those that were, and they haven't seen everything, of course, because it was a modified limited hangout by the Biden gang. But those that were reviewed by the Times show that the Biden White House had a process to establish that Biden had orally made decisions in meetings before the staff secretary, Stephanie Feldman, who managed use of the auto pen, would have clemency records put through the signing device. They really didn't have a process. It was, hey, I talked to the boss. He said we can pardon someone. So I don't know why they think that's a process. That's not a process. And one of the significant areas, or one of the significant group of pardons, Biden had a late night meeting, and this is how it's described. Emails show that Mr. Biden added the preemptive pardons for his family at a January 19th meeting. They also suggest that he changed some of his thinking. The summary of the first meeting said Mr. Biden had decided to grant a pardon to Don Singleman, a former Democratic governor of Alabama who was convicted in 2006 of federal corruption charges. The summary of the second said the president decided to rescind his approval, and then he changed his mind after he was lobbied for James Clyburn, who was a friend of his from South Carolina. Biden kept his aides until nearly 10 p.m. to talk through such decisions, according to people familiar with the matter. And by the way, simultaneously with these stories coming out, the Biden gang is taking the Fifth Amendment up on the Hill that's investigating issues like this, specifically the use of the auto pen. The emails show that an aide to Mr. Siskel sent a draft summary of Mr. Biden's decisions at that meeting to an assistant to Mr. Zients, who was the chief of staff. You don't know who the chief of staff was to Biden. If you want to know what's so corrupt about this city, you know who the chief of staff is to Trump, don't you? Susie Wiles. Everyone knows it. Did you know who the chief of staff to Biden was? I barely knew his name. Jeff Zients. Zients. Did you know it? My guess is many of you never heard his name before. One of the most important people in the federal government, the media protected him from having to answer any questions, practically speaking, about the crazed Biden administration. The assistant forwarded it to Mr. Reed and Mr. Zients, who was another official, asking for their approval, and then sent a final version to Ms. Feldman, copying many meeting participants and aides at 10:28. 3 minutes later, Zients hit reply all and wrote, I approve the use of the auto pen for the execution of all the following pardons. So that's how people like Fauci, Milley, etc., were pardoned by his chief of staff. He approved it. Not he, the big guy. He, the big guy's chief of staff. So it's really quite incredible. And it further suggests the pardons are null and null and void. I mean, the challenge for those of us concerned about this process is that my general understanding is the courts have said that you don't need to have even a pardon signed in order for it to be valid. And the other parts of the story reference that he pardoned entire groups of people subject to particular sentencing laws that he wanted them to be he wanted to commute their sentences or otherwise protect them from having to serve crime. And it was a big list of names. And he didn't sign off on the names. Even after he authorized the so-called list of names, the lists were expanded and changed without Biden's knowledge. So, it seems to me that all of those issues should be subject to litigation. If I was the Justice Department. Now, one of the worst pardons was for Hunter. Hunter's pardon, in part, was okay, because he was pardoned for specific crimes that he had been convicted of or pled guilty to. But he also had a part of the pardon that applied to anything else he may have done since, I think, 2014. You know, and that's the part that's invalid. So Judicial Watch filed a lawsuit for the Hunter Biden pardon records from the Justice Department just the other day. Judicial Watch sues Justice Department for Hunter Biden pardon records. Filed a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit about a week ago for records and communications of the offices of Attorney General, Deputy General, Attorney General, and or Associate Attorney General or their designated representatives about the pardoning of Robert Hunter Biden by his father, President Joe Biden. Of course, you know who was running the Justice Department at the time was Merrick Garland. So we want to know who knew what and when over at the Justice Department about the Biden pardon. Now, typically, you can't sue the White House under FOIA. So we have to try to get these records a separate way. These records typically wouldn't be made available for some time as their presidential records. So there's a process in place that's going to prevent them being released publicly for some time, unless the Trump administration starts releasing records pursuant to subpoenas from or just on their own to educate the public about what went on here, which we would encourage them to do. So it's up to Judicial Watch to try to figure out what we can get under law about this major scandal. I mean, there haven't been pardons like this really ever in the United States history in terms of the scope and wide-scale nature of the abuse. And on top of it, you've got and it's never happened before, legitimate questions about the authorization to make the pardons at all. Did Biden authorize the pardons? The New York Times story further confirms there's no record of that happening. There's a record of his chief of staff authorizing the pardons, but not of Joe himself. So that's a big deal. And Judicial Watch, once again, is in the middle of this big deal. You know, and we're not stopping with just the pardons. We've got multiple federal lawsuits on Joe Biden's family corruption. I mean, we just had a lawsuit last week about the National Archives. Records about Joe Biden's crime family activities when he was vice president, which, of course, bled through the Trump administration. Because remember, Trump was impeached for blowing the whistle on Joe Biden's corruption as vice president with Ukraine. We have records, a lawsuit about the IRS investigation of Hunter Biden. And then, of course, we exposed how the CIA helped rig the 2020 election by helping those 51 intelligence advisors or officials, former, all of whom I think had national security clearances, try to mask the Hunter Biden laptop by calling it a likely Russia disinformation campaign. And the CIA rushed through approval of that in a way that was inappropriate and without much precedent. And Judicial Watch has the detail of that through our Freedom of Information Act lawsuits. So I appreciate that Congress is looking into things, and the great news is that your Judicial Watch is looking into things as well. And we're not, and of course, we started this years ago. Congress is just starting it basically 2 months ago. I don't understand why they didn't investigate Joe Biden's mental capacities when he was the president. I was calling on them to do it, 25th Amendment and all of that. But they were afraid. They were afraid. Now that he's out of office, they're not afraid. You know, and look, I support more information generally, but I got to call it as I see it. You can always count on Congress to be a day late and a dollar short on most investigations. And we're seeing that with the pardon investigations and the use of the auto pen issue. I mean, the auto pen issue is kind of like a stalking horse for his mental capacities, right, and capabilities. That issue should have been investigated while he was president in order to protect the darn country. And it wasn't. So I suspect more lawsuits are coming from Judicial Watch. And I have good reason to suspect it because I'm president of Judicial Watch and I kind of know what's in the hopper. Speaking of corrupt government officials, one of the worst out there is Adam Schiff. Yeah, I got confused because there's so many terrible corrupt politicians. I literally went through three or four names and I latched on to Schiff at the end. And he's been subject to a criminal referral for mortgage fraud. It's really quite a simple case. The letter here is, I don't know, do you all have it in the back? Here's the referral, dated May 27th, referring him to the Justice Department for a criminal investigation. He purchased a property in Maryland for $870,000. He entered into a Fannie Mae-backed mortgage agreement with a mortgage company for $610,000 at a rate of 5.625% for a term of 30 years. And he affirmed that that would be his principal residence. And then he reconfirmed that it was his principal residence a few times after that. But at the same time, Schiff took a homeowner tax exemption on a condo he owns in Burbank, California, also claiming that home as his primary residence for a $7,000 reduction off the first 1% property tax. And in 2023, a spokesman for Schiff asserted that Adam's primary residence is Burbank, California, and will remain so when he wins the Senate seat. Primary residence mortgages receive more favorable loan terms, including lower interest rates, than secondary residence mortgages. Essentially, your home, you get the lowest possible interest rate generally available, you know, given your credit score. If you buy a vacation home, you pay extra because that's more than it's just an added risk having a second home in terms of the point of view of most banks. So you pay a premium. Lenders view secondary residence mortgages as significantly riskier. As a borrower is more likely to continue paying off a primary residence mortgage during any financial hardship. Interest rates on secondary residence mortgages are typically between 0.25% to 0.5% higher than their primary residence counterparts. However, this gap can widen depending on the lender. Mr. Schiff appears to have falsified records in order to receive favorable loan terms and also appears to have been aware of the financial benefits of a primary residence mortgage when compared to a secondary residence mortgage, as a spokesperson in 2023 told the media outlet 2000 at CNN that his addresses have been listed as a primary residence for loan purposes because they are both occupied throughout the year and to distinguish them from a vacation property. But you can only have one primary residence. So this looks like to be mortgage fraud. And Schiff's response was very peculiar. I commented on in this video.
The president today is accusing me of fraud. And the basis of his accusation is that I own a home in Maryland and I own a home in California. Big surprise. Members of Congress, almost all of them own more than one home or rent more than one home because we're required to be on both coasts. So he is using my ownership of two homes to make a false claim of mortgage fraud. But what really is going on here is this is...
Look, he's dissembling here. It's not about whether he owns two homes. The question is whether he listed both homes in California and Maryland as primary residences. And if he did, it could be a violation of federal law, as is now being pursued by the Trump administration. The fact that he's being so dishonest about this suggests he may have done what he's accused of.
So do you trust Adam Schiff? I don't. He's kind of admitting through omission that he did what he's accused of doing. Maybe a defense available to him. I don't know. But he's got a terrible record on ethics, an abuser, a leaguer, a liar. And I don't use the term liar loosely. I want you to go back and look at all of my... you're not going to go back and do this. But I suspect if you went back and looked at all of my public commentary on government officials, including people that you think I hate or despise because of their evident criminality, I rarely use the term liar. Rarely. Schiff is a liar. Demonstrated six ways to Sunday. And so does he deserve the benefit of the doubt on this? No way, Jose. So I don't know what the Trump administration is going to do with this. But this is, straightforward violation of law if what they allege is true. So Adam Schiff should be subject to criminal investigation, not only on this, but a whole host of other matters. But, you know, the law is the law here. And when you have senior government officials violating it with seeming impunity, it's especially important that who have the responsibility to enforce the law take action to enforce it. Judicial Watch is, we sometimes have to kind of sue over things we prefer not to have to even look into because it's such a terrible situation. And one of these issues is the Covenant school shooting in Tennessee in March of 2023. And there's a big issue related to the motivations of the shooter. There were documents supposedly that constituted what many consider to be a manifesto, and it was not being released. And materials like that typically are released. So we sued on behalf of one of our friends in Tennessee, a retired sheriff in Hamilton County, Tennessee, James Hammond, and the Tennessee Firearms Association. Which is, the anti-gun lobby uses these shootings as an attempt, to leverage gun bans from them. So, the truth about the motivations, the circumstances of the shooting, and the role of guns in both promoting this, allowing the shooting to take place. Obviously, it was a shooting, and maybe the presence of guns that could have averted it, that's a matter of debate. So we need all the details. So we sued in Tennessee, couldn't get anything. And the families, for reasons that I don't want to necessarily second guess, but I think legally were incorrect, came in and essentially thwarted our attempts to get this information, this manifesto information. So we're now at the appellate level. But the feds had the records as well. And we had sued for the records in, 2023 too. And we weren't getting them from the Biden administration. And then we saw that Megyn Kelly had been granted access to them by the Trump administration, which is fine, you know. But she wasn't allowed to publish them. We've been in court for years, and they were telling us we couldn't get them. So we went back and said, what's going on here? You said we weren't allowed to see them because there's an ongoing investigation. There is no more ongoing investigation. The shooter's dead for 2 years. What's happening? And then you had Megyn Kelly be given permission to talk about them but not publicize them or publish them, which is not exactly the most transparent approach. And the feedback we got back was, you're right, Judicial Watch. The senior official in the Justice Department has authorized their release, so we got the documents, or at least parts of the documents, known as the manifesto of the Tennessee shooter from the FBI. And according to the FBI, they completed the interim review of records subject to our request, they withheld some information under 7C and F, which is law enforcement. As I recall, privacy is C. I forget what F is. Anyway, so there are appeals related to, I mean, there's material in here that's been withheld. I didn't see anything that we'd probably end up fighting over, but who knows? But I tell you, this is the first time they've been officially published. There have been leaks of some of the records to Steven Crowder, who's been doing some good journalism on this. Megyn Kelly was able to talk about them. But this is the first official leak, the first FOIA release of the records. So the first official publication where we can confirm these are the records, right? And they're really terrible to read. And I don't want to go through them individually with you because it's just so awful. And as I say in the release, I try to characterize them generally so you know what's in them. The records detail the shooter's violent thoughts, and that's a nice way of putting it. She's a very disturbed individual. The targeting and planning of the school shooting attack on the Covenant School and her transgender-related distress. The records show she considered an attack on a mall. This is interesting, I thought, but she thought better of it because she noted that security had been stepped up and there was too much of a security presence there for her to think that she could do it. And when you look through the records, and I encourage people to review them. I mean, I'm just warning you, it's not, they're very unpleasant. It's they convey that, you know, the records show a very disturbed young woman, childlike in many respects. I mean, when you see what her, I mean, one of these documents is before death goal list, and most of her goals were to look at cartoons and juvenile-oriented films. You know, basically a child, basically the goal list of a young, not an old teenager, but a young teenager. So it's upsetting to see. And then she's got horrible language describing herself, her self-hatred, how she wants to die. And then she says terrible things about the targets of her violence. It's terrible. I keep on saying terrible, terrible, terrible. It really is terrible to see. But what's useful about the material, and which is why it should have been made public long ago, is that it may help Americans understand and better protect and prepare and prevent future mass shootings at schools and other locations. I mean, you read the material, you say, you can see that what the circumstances were and what her thinking was. Maybe it will alert people, hey, there's someone I know who's behaving like this. And in terms of what she planned, then the details about her plan are really significant. So we essentially got two notebooks. One notebook shows her really disturbing thoughts and writings. Another notebook gets into the details of her planning. She knew what she was going to do. It's not nice to see. And so hopefully by looking at what she was planning to do, I mean, for instance, the things she was prepping to do to prepare for the shooting was to watch a whole bunch of documentaries about other school shootings. So, I don't know. You can tell I don't like talking about it because we got the material this afternoon. I read through it. It was one of the most unpleasant things I've had to review while at Judicial Watch. Let's put it this way. And so, but it's in the public interest that it be released. So I caution you, it's available online at our website to look at it. And there may be some ramifications on it. People will make arguments one way or the other. And, you know, as people debate on it, you know, I'll share my views, but it's there for you to see. And there may be other materials. As I said, we still have this legal fight in Tennessee, you know, which has gone on interminably, in my view, completely at odds with any understanding we have of FOIA law. It's kind of another world with the courts down there to date, unfortunately. And so I also want to commend, again, the Justice Department, Bambani's Justice Department, for releasing this FBI material. I mean, a lot of this, I don't know if they could have been withheld, but, you know, just because it is public or should have been made public, it doesn't mean an agency releases it. So what I see between the release of this and the Biden material is a growing commitment, maybe, to transparency on key issues by the Trump administration, specifically the Bondi Justice Department. And that'd be good to see. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. You know, we'll applaud them when they're transparent. We'll highlight where they're not. I mean, that's all we can do as a group, right? And we do it with your support.
Thanks for watching. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and like our video down below.